Hello, everyone. Welcome to The Kevin Moore Show. I'm Kevin Moore, and it is a pleasure to be spending the next hour with you. Our opening musical selection was Promises, Promises, a wonderful song from the great composer, Burt Bacharach. And that's what I have for all of you today, the promise that this next hour will be informative, interesting, provocative, and maybe even a little exciting. A promise that our discussions will give you something to think about today and hopefully something to talk about tomorrow. Or what I'd like to think of as a civilized hour of culture and conversation. Well, as I like to do to begin each of our shows, I like to read or share a recent poignant story, an especially interesting essay, or some philosophical quotes or thoughts, or sometimes even little poetry that touches or speaks to us all. And given the fact that tomorrow we will be celebrating a very important day, Father's Day, I thought we'd read a little essay written by Dave Barry, the satirist and very talented writer. And he entitles his essay, In Short, A Perfect Day. Dave writes, Father's Day is coming, and millions of children and or wives are thinking, this year, I think I'll get Dad a nice casual shirt. Fine, go ahead. Although you might want to ask yourself a couple of questions first, such as, does Dad want another nice casual shirt? Have you noticed that Dad currently owns approximately 73 nice casual shirts, and he wears only two of them? And that he wears one of those two only when the other one is really dirty? Do you honestly believe that Dad is thinking, boy, I wish I had another shirt so I couldn't wear it? Of course not. Dad is thinking. Okay, never mind what Dad is thinking. Nobody ever really knows what Dad is thinking, including, much of the time, Dad. But trust me, he does not want a shirt. But, you say, when I gave him a shirt last year, he appeared to like it. Well, of course he did. Like all fathers, he has learned to simulate sincere appreciation for gifts that he has absolutely no use for. That's why Dad always responded so positively back when you used to give him, and I hope you no longer do this, although I understand it still happens even in 21st century America, a tie. Wow, Dad would go, a piece of cloth to knot tightly around my neck, strikingly similar to the numerous other pieces of neck cloth wadded together in the back of my closet. In my entire life, I have met two men who were genuinely interested in ties. Both of these men were in the tie industry. Dads are so good at feigning appreciation that they even were able, years ago, to pretend they were happy to receive cologne. This was back in the dark days of cologne giving, which mercifully came to an end after the horrible 1986 tragedy in Cincinnati, wherein a 72-year-old man's house collapsed under the weight of the estimated 2,000 unopened bottles of Old Spice that he had stored in his attic. Okay, you are saying, then what should I get for Dad? If I ask him what he wants, he always says, nothing. Well, that's because he knows that if he told you what he really wants, you wouldn't give it to him. For example, let's consider the area of clothing. The nicest Father's Day surprise of all for Dad would be if you handed him a box and he unwrapped it, and there, inside, sitting on a bed of folded tissue, was the pair of his undershorts that somebody threw away 6 months ago without asking Dad, because they had reached the stage where they were 3% undershorts and 97% holes. Dad misses those undershorts. They were his faithful undershorts companion. But of course, now they are in a landfill somewhere along with Dad's Led Zeppelin t-shirt, which Dad brought and wore at a 1972 concert during which he stood on his seat and sang Whole Lotta Love. Yes, Dad did this. Somebody threw the shirt away 2 years ago, again without asking Dad, because it had a bunch of stains which happened to have great sentimental value to Dad because... Okay, never mind about the stains. The point is that you cannot give Dad these things for Father's Day. But you know what you can give him? You can give him what he always tells you he wants. Nothing. I mean it. For Dad, the perfect Father's Day would be one in which he didn't even realize that it was Father's Day because nobody was making him appreciate gifts he didn't want or read greeting cards filled with lame Father's Day poetry. Such as, when I was a little tyke, you showed me how to ride a bike. And you were sweet to me the day I drove your car into the bay. Dad, I think you're really grand. I'm praying for your prostate gland. There would be none of this on the perfect Father's Day. There would just be Dad, wearing his oldest surviving undershorts, free of pressure, maybe just sitting in front of the TV watching the NBA playoffs. There would be no conversation, other than Dad periodically observing that these players today could carry the ball across Montana and never get called for traveling. That's how you can give Dad the perfect Father's Day. Of course, that's not all. You'd also make a restaurant reservation, and at the end of the day, you'd dress up and go out and have a nice dinner during which you'd propose a toast to Dad, who would happen to be back home in front of the TV, happily asleep in his veteran underwear. That would be perfect. But I know, you're going to get him a shirt. Dave Barry's, in short, a perfect day for Father's Day. That would fathers turn into? A funny guy. Well, we have some ideas and thoughts about Father's Day. Where did Father's Day come from? There's the question. Well, in the beginning, they created a day to honor mothers. It gave us a chance to say thank you and to pay back, just a little, all that Mom does and had done. A day to celebrate motherhood. And all was good. Mother's Day is a great success. Mother's Day has become an event. Card, candy, and flower sales skyrockets. Department stores run specials, and sales boom. Restaurants are packed with families treating their mothers to dinner. Mother's Day is the busiest phone day of the year, and traffic on that day is a nightmare. And this is how it should be. But in 1909, Sonora Smart Dodd, a devoted daughter from Spokane, Washington, campaigned for a Father's Day celebration in 1909 after listening to a church sermon on the merits of Mother's Day. Her mom had passed away, and her dad had served as both father and mother to his six children for 21 years. She is credited with being the driving force behind the holiday because a stateside celebration was proclaimed in 1910. Eventually, annual celebrations were held throughout the U.S. and Canada, but it wasn't until 1972 that the holiday was officially recognized by the U.S. Congress. 1972, huh? So Dad was given his day as well, a noble idea, but not very successful. Father's Day celebrations just never took off, particularly in the gift-giving department. JCPenney took a survey last year asking its customers what gifts they had given on Father's Day. The number two answer was nothing. But really, that's okay. Fatherhood, it is different. What Father's Day should really be about are the children who made us fathers. Instead of sitting around basking in the glory of fatherhood, we should participate in the joys of childhood. So, Dad, on this Father's Day, take your kids to their favorite places. Do their favorite activities. Play their games. Try cooking them their favorite meal. Give them their baths. Read them a story. Put them to bed. This Father's Day, just be a dad. Hey, even better, let's make it a Father's Weekend. Under these circumstances, who would object? Spend one day doing your children's activities and the other day sharing your activities with them. After all, chances are you won't be spending much time opening presents. That's true. Because that's what dads want. Nothing. A couple special things. Oh, let's talk about a special treat for Father's Day. Of course, our good friends over at Swirls, because Swirls cupcakes make people happy. Our good friend Pam Rose has created the Father's Day special chocolate whiskey pretzel. Jameson whiskey-infused chocolate cake, layers of Jameson-infused chocolate ganache, layer of hand-dipped salted chocolate pretzels, Jameson-infused double swirl buttercream topped with a hand-dipped salty pretzel. Whoa! Available in gluten-free, vegan gluten-free varieties. Wow. But if you're going to eat that much chocolate, doesn't matter if you're vegan or not. It looks delicious, too. I'm looking at a picture. Of course, Swirls Cupcakes, right at 705 West Belden, right around the corner from the Children's Memorial Hospital, or the old Children's Memorial Hospital. For information, 773-404-2253, because cupcakes make people happy. Or you can go on our website, swirlscupcakes.com. Pam Rose, make sure you mention our name to her. She'll always find something special for you. Some thoughts on Father's Day, which is true, because some great quotations. Bill Cosby said, "Fatherhood is pretending the present you love most is soap on a rope." Isn't it true? Harry Truman said, I have found the best way to give advice to your children is to find out what they want and then advise them to do it. What's that old saying? There's three ways to get something done. Pay someone to do it yourself, or forbid your children to do it. Mark Twain said, it is a wise child that knows its own father and an unusual one that unreservedly approves of him. Tim Russert, the late great broadcaster, said, whatever we achieve and whoever we are, we stand on our father's shoulders. Very interesting. And Henry David Thoreau, very touching quotation from Henry David Thoreau, of course, from Walden fame. Many men go fishing all of their lives without knowing that it is not fish they are after. Especially going fishing with your son. Very true. Or your daughter. We have the Dad Commandments that we'll share throughout the show. And fatherhood, you might argue, is too complicated to be reduced to capsule form, but complexity only adds intrigue to the quest for guiding principles. And do we need guiding principles? After all, the emotions, all the yelling, and all the laughter, they've distilled the duties and demands down to some basic and essential commandments. And there's kind of basically, as there was before, 10 commandments. The first one is, hey, Dad, be big. In spirit, that is. Consider some of the big guys you have gone before you. Father Time, God the Father. You can't give this role a walkthrough. You've got to play it. The kids expect stature from you. You're the anvil on which they hammer out their deal with the world. Be a presence in their lives and in their minds. So, hey, Dad, be big. And the second one is, hey, Dad, be small. Yes, this contradicts the first tip. Don't be so big that you suck all the air out of the room. Give your kids space to move around in, to test their thoughts and strengths. Take a back seat 3 or 4 times a week. Say, I don't know. Now and then, tell the kids you're sorry, assuming you behaved badly. You'll feel brand new. So just a couple. Hey, Dad, be big. Hey, Dad, be small. And we'll get to the other ones as our show goes on. Thought we'd play a little music from Ramsey Lewis, his newest CD, The Millennium Collection, from Lennon and McCartney. Great song. Julia, we'll be back on The Kevin Moore Show. Lewis, Julia, we're back on the Kevin Moore Show. Broadway in Chicago is thrilled to announce that Stuffed and Unstrung, a live, uncensored show that lets loose the perilous and provocative elements of comedic improvisation on stage with a bunch of puppets, will play the Bank of America Theater, 18 West Monroe, for 1 week only, June 12th through the 17th. Produced by West Beth Entertainment and Henser Alternative, Stuffed and Unstrung is created by award-winning director, producer, and writer Brian Henson, an actor and improvisational guru, Patrick Bristow, and features the miscreant puppets and the Jim Henson Company's renowned puppeteers. Stuffed and Unstrung is a wild romp in which the skilled art of puppetry and spontaneous comedy collide. Unpredictable and irreverent, it's never the same show twice. Expert puppeteers create twisted scenes and songs on the fly as suggestions from the audience prompt the improvised storylines unfolding on stage. This production delivers two shows in one as the hilarious puppet action is projected live on large screens flanking the stage while the puppeteers race around below displaying their skills in full view of the audience with live musical accompaniment. And Bristow as host, Stuffed and Unstrung boasts a cast of six world-class puppeteers in uninhibited live puppet performance as never seen before. And on the line with us right now is the award-winning star of stage, screen, and television, having been seen on Seinfeld, Friends, Curb Your Enthusiasm, and Mad About You. Patrick was in the films The Longest Yard, Austin Powers, and Showgirls. Teacher, mentor, a member of the renowned improvisational and sketch comedy theater group in L.A., The Groundlings, one of the brightest stars in the world of comedy and entertainment, and the co-creator and host of the groundbreaking presentation of Henson Alternative's Stuffed and Unstrung through June 17th at the Bank of America Theater, 18 West Monroe, Mr. Patrick Bristow. Patrick, welcome to the Kevin Moore Show.
Hi, Kevin. Thank you. I'm still a little bit stunned by that introduction. I was, as you were describing, thinking like, who is this guy?
Pretty talented guy, right?
Well, when you put it the way you did, yeah, I'm going to get a big fat head now.
Well, very well deserved, and certainly, what an evening in the theater yesterday. Everybody loved it, and I'm going to say this again, and we talked a little earlier. Stay here longer than a week, will you please?
Oh, we'd love to, you know, but you know how schedules go.
Oh, sure.
But, you know,
sure.
Maybe we'll be back.
You know, this is very unique, and when at first we saw it, it reminded me, and this goes back a couple of years, Patrick, Avenue Q. Remember Avenue Q with the puppets and so forth? And were you thinking about this when this was all put together with you and Brian? How did this all work out?
Well, actually, no. We weren't thinking about Avenue Q at all. This started as a class 7 years ago. Brian had me come to the Henson lot and teach improv technique to a group of puppeteers that he used on a regular basis for scripted material, because he thought that improv and, you know, the skills and confidence that that kind of training brings would enhance their performance in even scripted material. And he was right. And they took to it so quickly that a couple months into the classes, I said, maybe we should do a little, you know, a little show on the Henson lot for the other employees, just to give the puppeteers a chance to work with an audience, real suggestions, that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And we actually did an evening performance on the sound stage, and he rented out, you know, bleachers, and we had microphones and all technical support. And it was kind of a magical evening, and there were scouts there from the Aspen Comedy Festival, so the show kind of happened by accident.
Here we are enjoying this, and you said yourself, I think, in an interview a while back, that when you do improvisational comedy, and you've been doing this for years, and you've seen so many people, of course, being part of the Groundlings, where such great artists as Jimmy Fallon and Conan and Lorraine Newman and Phil Hartman and Will Ferrell and Kristen Wiig and on and on and on, that part of the Groundlings. But part of improvisational is making eye contact in the audience, because you feed on the energy and the emotions of the audience. Now, this is a little different because you're not actually looking at the audience, because now you have the puppets involved in this. What kind of difficulty does that present, Patrick?
Well, actually, the aspect of eye contact that is paramount is between the performers. You know, because when you're doing an improv with somebody and you're looking into their eyes, you know when they're about to start speaking so you won't interrupt them.
Okay.
You know if your fellow performer is a little bit nervous or has nothing. You can see that slight little dilation of the pupils. There's so many micro expressions we communicate with when we're looking at each other, and the puppeteers don't get to have that at all, because by virtue of the Henson puppeteering technique, which was developed for television specifically, they have to always be looking at the monitors, which show them only what the camera sees, mm-hmm. which is just the puppets.
Okay.
And puppets can be very expressive, but they can't squint. They can't look at you and go, I don't have anything. You know, they can't go, oh, I got this one. Just hold on. So, you know, Our puppeteers have to be really, really good, you know, ear listeners. Their aural listening has to be amazing because they don't get to do that kind of visual listening at all.
You know,
we
as an audience sit, and you bring up a very, very good point, which I guess we take for granted, that it's very important for that interaction and that connectivity to be between those performers on stage because, like you say, you know, somebody might have something, somebody might not have something, somebody's got to jump in at that particular point in time, and that connectivity is there. We take it for granted as an audience member. We figure, well, that's just the way it's supposed to be, but not so because you're kind of grasping a little bit yourself on stage.
Well, yeah, you know, just the entire notion of acting, you know, requires you to be in the moment and available to your scene partner. And when you're improvising and basically instant writing, that connection is your safety net. And we had to take that away for the puppeteers the way we do, you know, the camera monitor kind of puppeteering technique. So it took some of them a while to adjust to that, those who had improv experience before, you know, to basically be working with that handicap. But it's forced them to find other ways to create that connectivity.
As you have traveled around the country and, like you say, around the world, do you see different themes that the audience comes up with that they throw at you for improvisational ideas?
You know, sometimes there's a kind of a universal thing that when you put a bunch of puppets up there and you have an audience of adults and, you know, they've had maybe a glass of wine before the show or during in some cases, they kind of want to see the forbidden. And we don't set out or, you know, encourage it to go blue, but we have that kind of that caveat, I guess, that, you know, I know I'm using the word wrong. But we have that, you know, that escape clause. It's like it could go there. So that's why we say leave the kids at home. But, yeah, there have been a few trends in different places. Like in Australia, oh, my God, the more violent the puppets were, the better.
Really?
They loved violence. In Edinburgh, they seemed to love cheese. There was a cheese scene going on amongst a lot of the suggestions in the different shows. And we were like, what is the deal with cheese here? And, you know, but in cities like Chicago and San Francisco and New York, we seem to get a great balance of sophomoric, kind of lowbrow, fun suggestions, and then really intelligent ones or political ones. So it forces us to have to, you know, kind of keep up with current events and know what's going on, especially in the city that we're in, because the audience could very easily catch us with our pants down.
Well, we'd enjoy that, but we are trying to be as lowbrow as possible here in Chicago. And how about political? It gets a little political, I would imagine, this time of the year as we're talking about the election coming up.
Yeah, you know, last night we, you know, opened at the Bank of America,
right.
And we didn't really have there wasn't a strong political bent to the show. But every show is different, and sometimes, you know, the first couple suggestions from the audience kind of set a tone. You know, if people put out some kind of, you know, blue and forbidden stuff, well, then the audience, you know, is going to tend to want to see that. But halfway through the show, sometimes the audience might feel like, yeah, we're done with that, and then they want to see something different, and they start giving us more heady suggestions. Like, I remember one time, and it caught me off guard, I was asking for a school of thought, you know, a belief system or something, and somebody shouted out objectivism, and I had to take that moment and go back to college, which was many years ago, and go, oh, shoot, that's kind of that Ayn Rand fountainhead thing, right? Okay. And I was just glad that I was hosting it and I wasn't in the improv because I would have been an absolute idiot up there.
Well, you know, you have to be pretty quick with that because you had to come up with some ideas, whether they're real or perceived, and you have to make people think you do know what you're talking about. Maybe not the case, but you got to be convincing at least.
Well, yeah, the improvisers have that. I get to be the dumb host, you know, and I have on more than one occasion said, look, I'm a product of the Burbank Public Schools, which will probably get me in trouble with Burbank. But, sometimes I have to either play or actually just cop to being, you know, dumb host.
Well, of course, you're talking to someone who grew up with Sesame Street, as his children have, and you're with Brian Henson, whose father was the iconic man who put all this together and
yep.
With Sesame Street, and then what lives he touched along the way. Or was it Joan Gaines Cooney, right, with Sesame Street. Just phenomenal what's been achieved and what's been accomplished. I remember years ago when Saturday Night Live, Patrick, was just starting.
Mm-hmm.
Henson puppets were on there, but they were kind of those macabre puppets that were on there at the time.
Yes, and there was a cast of, I think, monster puppets.
Right, yeah. Monster puppets. And they always had something to say, but I always enjoyed it. And it was just very unique because you never saw it. And then it kind of went away, and then they were gone for a while. I wonder if it would ever come back. But I think the kind of the spirit of them exists now in Stuffed and Unstrung. It basically is what you got, you and Brian are kind of putting together.
Well, you really hit on something there because when Jim did SNL, he was able to kind of de-Sesame Street, you know, his approach for that specific project. And in the beginning of our show, we show a little short video, and it has a montage in it of early Jim Henson commercials and routines that were subversive and violent and hilariously dark and macabre. And that was really a big part of his personal sense of humor that obviously didn't really have a place on Sesame Street. So to kind of bring back a little bit of the spirit of his twistedness, I think has been something that, from what I've heard, you know, from Henson family members, is something that they really enjoy because, you know, they knew his darker sense of humor and sensibility. And to see that getting, you know, a new life in this kind of reimagined, show is seems to be gratifying for them and for people that knew him.
Well, you've certainly worn a lot of different hats, as I said before, being on Seinfeld and Friends and Mad About You and so forth, being in the movies and so forth. I just saw Longest Yard the other day, and I got to remember to look out for you the next time. What part did you play in that?
Oh, it's very small. I'm in the beginning, and I'm Courtney Cox's British friend who has a little bit of a crush on Adam Sandler as they're watching the news coverage of him taking her expensive car out on the road and thrashing it.
Okay.
And my character's kind of enjoying it.
Well, you know, it's funny, and it's, like I say, you've worn so many different hats. Are you going to continue to do this, or are you still going to jump back into the comedy and TV and so forth?
Well, you know, because of our schedule with Stuffed and Strong, it's kind of on again, off again kind of thing, I'm able to do that. In fact, I had to miss one Stuffed show on our last tour because I was shooting a scene in Michael Bay's new movie, Pain and Gain.
Okay.
So that was a blast. So, you know, I still do the TV and film work, you know, when it's offered and when it, you know, doesn't conflict too heavily with, you know, our shows. But this is so much fun, you know, for me personally, and so much fun to be part of that. You know, sometimes when I get an audition for a TV or film thing, I'm like, oh, God, I hope it doesn't get in the way of the puppets. You know, and that's really not a very good actor attitude. Well, I don't know if I want to be on that TV show for that guest star. I've got puppets I got to play with.
It shows because we all had fun you last night, and I know it'll be that way the rest of the week. What happens when Henson puppeteers are unleashed? You get a new breed of intelligent nonsense that is Stuffed and Unstrung, a live, outrageous comedy variety show for adults only. Enjoy an unpredictable evening when six talented, hilarious, expert puppeteers will improvise songs and sketches based on your suggestions. With a motley group of characters brought to life by the world-renowned puppeteers of the Jim Henson Company, this is not your average night at the Improv, and it is definitely not for children. But all others are welcome to enjoy the uninhibited anarchy of live puppet performance as never seen before. Broadway in Chicago are thrilled to announce that Stuffed and Unstrung, a live, uncensored show that lets loose the perilous and provocative elements of comedic improvisation on stage with a bunch of puppets, will play the Bank of America Theater, 18 West Monroe, for 1 week only through June 17th. And on the line with us right now is the co-creator and host of Stuffed and Unstrung, our good friend Patrick Bristow. Patrick, I'm going to give a phone number here if people would like tickets, 800-775-2000. You know, thanks for taking a little time, and certainly I know it's quick, but enjoy your time in Chicago here. Come back and see us, will you?
Oh, we'd love to. We're already in love with the city.
It'll be a great week and a continued success.
Thank you.
Thank you, Patrick.
Bye, Kevin.
Thank you. Patrick Bristow, one of the stars of Stuffed and Unstrung, the co-creator and host, of course. Just a funny evening in the theater. Stuffed and Unstrung, and you'd really like it because it's a great venue down at the Bank of America Theater, 18 West Monroe. Again, for tickets, 800-775-2000. Collaboration announces a new format and the world premiere lineup for the 12th annual Sketchbook Festival's Sketchbook Reincarnate through July 15th. Entering its 12th year, Collabor Action Sketchbook Festival has expanded to include five programs of world premier theater in rotating rep in Collabor Action's two venues in the Flatiron Arts Building. This year's festival changes the previous seven-minute recipe by integrating longer world premiere productions, including Honey Buns by Dean Evans, The Four by Patrice McLean, and Sleep with Apples by Meredith Miller, along with a variety of shorter pieces. Sketchbook Reincarnate will showcase 13 pieces total featuring contemporary theater, visual arts, and music. The program will run through July 15th. Production times range from 5 to 70 minutes. And on the line with us right now is the production manager, director, theatrical producer, organizational leader, one of the brightest young stars in the world of Chicago theater, now presenting the 12th Annual Sketchbook Festival through July 15th at the Flatiron Arts Building, 1579 North Milwaukee in Wicker Park, Ms. Sarah Moeller. Sarah, welcome to the Kevin Moore Show.
Hi, thank you for having me.
Well, I'm certainly going to enjoy talking with you better than Mosley. I can tell you that right now.
No.
No, I'm just kidding. He's a good pal and certainly has done wonderful things. And congratulations on the 12th Annual Sketchbook Festival.
I know. It's great.
Certainly this year is bigger and better than ever. And what's the significance of Sketchbook Reincarnate?
Well, I think it's the new the format change that you addressed already. You know, prior to this year, the first 11 years of Sketchbook, it was always somewhere between 14 and 16 seven-minute plays. But we kind of were feeling there's so many 10-minute play festivals in the city. Let's try and jazz this up a little bit and make it bigger and better this year. And a couple years ago, we added the devised format, and that did really well for us. So we decided this year, when we took submissions in the fall, that we would open it up to plays up to 80 minutes. So we ended up with three pieces that are about 50 minutes and three pieces that are 30 minutes, which has been a great addition to the festival.
How many people kind of send in their ideas for plays, Sarah?
Anywhere from 300 to 400 usually.
Wow.
We get them from all over the world, literally.
Really, really. And do you have a committee then that goes through them all and kind of chooses which ones they're the most, they think they'd be most successful?
Yeah, we do. You know, we have two or three of our top readers, you know, people that are dramaturgs or directors or writers themselves that are associated with our company go through. And then we generally find other readers in addition to those. So those couple will read everything, two or three people, and then we'll get another five or six people in to read through the shorter list with us.
And do you see, Sarah, after doing this for so many years, that you see some of these new playwrights that start out with a five-minute play or a 10-minute play, that gives them the impetus maybe to build upon that, to do something a little more long-term?
You mean so far as with writing their plays in general or
yes,
just with
right,
that piece?
Right, right.
I think we've seen a lot of people that have had pieces in Sketchbook Festival do really well for themselves, and Sketchbook kind of starting as a giving them kind of a starting point to their careers. In addition to you know, putting them in the mix with some more mature, known playwrights. You know, Brett C. Leonard's been in the festival a couple times. But then people like Emily Schwartz wrote plays for Sketchbook way back in, like, 2005, 2006, mm-hmm. You know, when she was just starting out in the city and Strange Tree was just becoming big and stuff like that. So.
You know, I've known Anthony for many years. Certainly he is one of the most important people in Chicago theater. I know he's very humble and he would admit to that, but it's very true because he's given so many young people direction. He's given them the ability to come out and express themselves and the opportunity to showcase their talents in this, on the stage of Collabor Action. Not maybe would be able to get that anywhere else.
Yeah, I definitely think that's a big part of the Sketchbook Festival is, you know, getting young talent and old talent in the same room working together and kind of feeding off each other's energy and their experience. And, you know, it's a big learning experience for everybody involved, I think.
Now, in the production process, do you have people that are directors like yourself or Anthony that watch what's going on and maybe tweak it a little bit so you can give people a little direction as they go?
We have done that, certainly. You know, and I think that we all do that for each other as artists, whether it's at Sketchbook or at some other show. You know, we invite our peers and our coworkers and colleagues to come watch our pieces in the early stage and give us feedback, make sure that it makes sense to the outside eye.
Now, I'm looking at one of the presentations that is titled Invention of Falling, and the director is Sarah Moeller.
That would be me.
Tell us a little bit about that.
Invention of Falling is by Kristen Idazak, who is a company member of ours and a fairly recent DePaul graduate. She and I have collaborated a couple of times on Sketchbook and on other projects. She's a dear friend of mine. The Invention of Falling is about a beauty queen who thinks she's the reincarnation of Galileo. But it's just a nice, short, sweet monologue featuring Mallory Ness, who's also a DePaul graduate.
Are you a DePaul lady?
Not for theater. Okay. I did get my master's there, but not in theater.
Now, when you're putting this together, you interact with the actors and the actresses that are part of the ensemble. Do some of them act in more than one of the plays that are presented?
No, they don't. That's actually been something that we've stayed true so long as I've been working on Sketchbook, that we make sure to get make sure that there are different actors in each piece. Part of it makes the festival bigger and gives more people more opportunities.
There's a lot of plays here to swallow. It's difficult to digest it all in one spot. How would you suggest people approach coming to the Collaboration Sketchbook Festival?
Well, I think it depends on how, you know, what kind of person, how they want to approach it. We've had a couple marathoners, you know, last Saturday and Sunday we did all 13 plays. It starts at about 1 o'clock in the afternoon and takes you till about 10, with a nice 90-minute dinner break in the middle there.
Now, Mosley serves beer with that, doesn't he?
There's beer. There's beer and whiskey, so if you need something, it's there for you. But other folks that may want to take it in shorter bites, you know, there are shows playing Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, and some Mondays as well. So, you know, I'd take a look at the festival calendar and just kind of see what appeals to you. You know, there's a website up, sketchbook12.com, and that website lists all the shows and all the people involved in it. So you can kind of look through the descriptions and see what might best fit what you want to see.
Well, and it goes through July 15th, which gives people a little time, and they can come back more than once, which is nice.
Exactly. You know, the festival has a little bit of a longer run this year than we have in the past, but with the expansion and addition of the longer pieces, we want to make sure that everybody gets the chance to come out and see it.
And it's great to be in the new Flatiron Arts building.
Oh, it's wonderful. It's so nice.
Sketchbook is collaboration at its best, breaking down the walls that divide theater, music, visual art, video, and the internet. The Chicago Tribune has hailed the festival as stellar. The Chicago Reader raves, the atmosphere is all-inclusive and embracing in the celebration of creativity, and as a result, you're willing to go along for the ride no matter what. And New City proclaims, one of the city's most intriguing off-loop companies, Sketchbook has become a must-see annual event. Collaboration celebrates its 16th year as a Chicago-based arts organization and has recently moved its theater and operation headquarters to the historic Flatiron Arts Building, 1579 North Milwaukee, in the heart of Wicker Park. By incorporating innovative artists and interdisciplinary collaboration, Collaboration creates groundbreaking theatrical and art-based experiences. Entering its 12th year, Collaboration Sketchbook Festival has expanded to include 5 programs of world premiere theater in rotating rep in Collaboration's 2 venues in the Flatiron Arts Building. The program will run through July 15th. Production times range from 5 to 70 minutes. And on the line with us right now is Sarah Moeller, the production manager of the Collaboration Sketchbook Festival, Sketchbook Reincarnate. Sarah, if people would like a phone number or website, can you provide that for us?
Yeah, we have our own website, collaboration.org, or you can also go to sketchbook12.com. That's the microsite for the Sketchbook Festival that features everything about the festival. You can also always call the office for tickets. We recommend going online for the tickets.
Mm-hmm.
It's just a little more streamlined that way.
Well, tell our good pal Anthony Mosley I said hello, and we're going to come down and see things, and I hope things are just terrific over the next month or so.
Oh, thank you so much.
Thanks for taking a little time, Sarah.
Of course.
Sarah Moeller, the production manager from the 12th Annual Sketchbook Festival through July 15th at the Flatiron Arts Building, 1579 North Milwaukee in Wicker Park. For information, 312-226-9633. Of course, continuing the Dad Commandments, hey, Dad, be big. Hey, Dad, be small. Hey, Dad, come home. Lots of fathers have 2 jobs, if that's your situation. Well, that's okay. You'll have no heat from anyone. But if you can pay the bills without working double shifts, get home when you can. Nothing good can happen until you do. Number 4, bob and weave, Bubba. Stay light on your feet. Don't make too many hard and fast rules. Don't insist on having your way with the kids just because the rest of the world isn't always overly interested in the sound of your voice. There is a difference between authority and power. Have the first. Don't abuse the second. Number five, never dance in front of their friends. Remember the cautionary legend of the father who once picked his kids up at a junior high dance and actually went into the gym and did a few seconds of the Hully Gully with Margie Costanzo? His adult children still have embarrassment and nightmares. Number six, save your money, big man. If you're not careful, the kids will send you to the poorhouse $3.29 at a time. Think college tuition. Think down payment on their starter homes. Although it's true that money can't buy happiness, it can buy lots of other stuff. Number seven, spend your money, tightwad. F. Scott Fitzgerald said the sign of a first-rate mind was the ability to have two opposite opinions at the same time. You're a first-rate mind, Dad, so spring for the glowing monster trading cards. If you've got the money, pop for the musical princess crown. What are you saving your money for, pal? College? Ha! Can't possibly save enough, isn't that the truth? There is the future, and then there is now. And this is it. Four world premieres and two U.S. premieres featured in Ensemble Español's Flamenco Passion Gala performances at the North Shore Center for the Performing Arts in Skokie, June 22nd through the 24th. The elegance and passion of Spain's dance, music, and culture is showcased in Ensemble Español's 36th American-Spanish Dance and Music Festival, Thursday, June 14th through Sunday, June 24th. Each year, this popular festival attracts thousands of cultural fans from around the world to experience Spain and America with the Ensemble Español Spanish Dance Theater's full company and guest artists from Spain. The Chicago Sun-Times hails this 10-day celebration of Spanish culture as a date worth keeping every summer. For more than three decades, we've been bringing our esteemed and popular annual showcase of Spanish art and culture to Chicagoland, says company founder and artistic director Dame Libby Cameco. This is an extraordinary achievement among Chicago area performing arts festivals, especially those with a dance focus. And it speaks volumes to the enduring high artistic merits of our programming and artists, as well as the pure, spirit-moving entertainment that awaits everyone who has the opportunity to experience any and of all of our exciting festival events. And on the line with us right now is the award-winning dancer, having received the Artistic Ambassador Award from the Ruth Page Foundation and the Mayor's Appreciation Award for his exceptional contribution to the arts, a member of Who's Who in Dance, Hispanic Americans, and the Business Leaders in America, teacher, mentor, executive director, and proud member of Ensemble Español's now presenting Ensemble Español's 36th American Spanish Dance and Music Festival, June 14th through the 24th at both Northeastern Illinois University and the North Shore Center for the Performing Arts in Skokie. On the line with us right now is Mr. Jorge Perez. Jorge, welcome to the Kevin Moore Show.
Oh, hola, Kevin. Thank you. Thank you so much for having me. Glad to be here.
Well, it's great to have you, and congratulations. Geez, you were just a kid when this started 36 years ago, huh?
Yes, I was. And in fact, because of our unique partnership with Northeastern Illinois University, where the Ensemble Español has been in residence for the last 36 years, we have this program where we actually have our artists, you know, pay their way through college via dance. And that was one of the things that I was looking for, was to help cover my tuition costs. And I auditioned for the Ensemble Español, and I was hooked. I never left.
You know, we had the opportunity of talking with Dame Libby a while back, and it's amazing what she has accomplished in putting this together, and more amazing that she has been able to cultivate and bring talented people like yourself into the Ensemble Español to make this as successful in what it is today.
Yeah, no, it's amazing. Her work is something that is just, you know, so admirable and very unique in that, you know, she herself was given this grand opportunity with the famous Jose Greco, who gave her a scholarship when she was about 17, 18 years old, and it changed her life. I mean, she did not know that she actually, you know, was going to, she was actually accompanying a friend on an audition, and she had no idea that he would, you know, select her there and ask her to audition, and her life changed. And, you know, she's connected education and scholarship with her incredible talents, bringing always every year guest artists from Spain, so that not only will our artists grow with these top quality artistry, but, you know, making sure that our communities definitely are exposed to, you know, these grand artists. Another grand artist that she always definitely has connected with Grammy that we're so excited that they're back this year is Juan Mata and Ana Gonzalez, who are the founding members of the National Ballet of Spain, and we're really honored to present their choreographies. And this year they're presenting 3 days of a special seminar on the history of Spanish dance, going way back to the 17, 1800s. And so we're really, truly honored to have them with us. And Carmela Greco, who is the daughter of Jose Greco,
oh, really?
The gentleman who gave Dame Libby, her first scholarship, is here with us. And a beautiful thing that she's done is that she's actually heading a program. For the first time, we're taking our youth company, 18 members, to study in Spain under Miss Carmela Greco.
So, wow.
Very, very exciting festival this year.
I can hear that in your voice. And what an exciting opportunity for these young people to be able to go and study overseas.
Kevin, can you imagine the impact of just exactly going overseas and then visiting and working with these, you know, grand artists, where we're hopefully taking them to the Prado Museum, where they're going to see many of the works that they've seen here via slides, all these wonderful paintings of Goya and Picasso. And then, of course, we're also looking at taking them to different, you know, Casso exhibits, Spanish shows right there. And Juan Mata, who is still the rehearsal director of the National Ballet of Spain, will be giving us a tour of the National Ballet of Spain headquarters for these children to experience. So it's definitely going to be life-changing.
I'm looking at two things that stick out. Of course, Sombras y Cenizas.
Sombras y Cenizas.
Cenizas.
Translates to shadows and ashes. Yeah. And it's a beautiful world premiere piece that Carmela Greco and Paloma Gomez are actually dedicating to their fathers, who were these wonderful Spanish legendary artists, Jose Greco and Jose Gomez. And we're really, really excited for that endeavor.
You know, there's an old saying, Jorge, that we stand on the shoulders of those who have come before us. And here's an example of paying tribute to those same people that whose shoulders we do stand on.
Yes, Kevin, exactly. And, you know, one of the things that we always tell our artists when they come here, please make sure that you share your history, not only the history of the Spanish dance that you are presenting, but your history, so that all these young artists realize that, you know, a path has been established for them, that, you know, where we have these grand artists who, you know, have pretty much worked so hard, and it's now up to us on our shoulders to keep that legacy alive, you know, for many more generations to enjoy. And Kevin, I do want to say that our festival closes at the North Shore Center for the Performing Arts in Skokie on the 22nd, 23rd, and 24th, but we actually kick it off tomorrow night, June 14th, at Northeastern Illinois University, our home base, with a flamenco duende music and dance concert with our guest artists. And on the 15th through the 21st, we have the guest artist teaching over 57 classes in all three styles of Spanish dance, classical, folklore, and flamenco. I mean, Spain is here for those exciting 10 days.
It's going to be an exciting 10 days. Now, I noticed one other thing here, La Boda de Luis Alonso, and although you are responsible for all the administrative aspects of Ensemble Español, I think Jorge Perez will be on the stage there, won't he?
Kevin, call me the dancing executive still. Yes, there are a few pieces that I still continue to perform on stage, along with our associate artistic director and first dancer, Irma Suarez Ruiz, who's also been here for quite some time. And Kevin, we were just saying we were about to give La Boda de Luis Alonso, which translates to The Wedding of Luis Alonso, we were about to give that role up after so many years, but Dame Libby thought, can you do it please one more time? And I'm like, you know what, Irma, we'll do the wedding, and maybe the next time we do it, we'll call it The Divorce, and the next generation of dancers will take over. But yeah, it's exciting that, you know, we're still able to contribute and of course present to Dame Libby and our communities here our work of so many years. But it's also been exciting giving up some of our roles and seeing, you know, this, you know, wonderful new generation take on these classical and important cultural iconic choreographies. Truly, truly amazing.
I can't imagine that Dame Libby had to twist your arm too much to do that, though.
No, not at all. It's like, yeah, it's like a bittersweet. It's like, oh, no, I don't want to, but sure, I'll do it. It's like, oh, my goodness.
Yeah, no, and, you know, I think it's good, too, Jorge, that these young people who are learning look up to you who have accomplished so much, or Dame Libby who has accomplished so much, and know that someday they can accomplish the same thing with hard work, perseverance, and getting that experience and professionalism.
Yes, Exactly. That's one of the things. And again, bringing these, you know, legendary guest artists here also, you know, reminds them that they are also still dedicated, you know, to this art form, regardless of their age. And that's the beauty of this festival, Kevin, is that we've got young artists here in their 20s who are dancing fantastic. But then we have someone like Carmela Greco, who is no young chicken, as Eddie Weiss called her. And, you know, she is still giving, you know, of herself in the flamenco art form. Incredible. And it's almost like she's at the peak, you know, of her career. Well, how can you say that, you know, for someone who's been on the stage around the world all her life? But, you know, for flamenco, the older you are, the more respected you are in this art form. Yeah.
Now, what about somebody who is not familiar with flamenco dancing? Would they be intimidated by coming out here, or is it a very welcoming program that you'll present?
You know what? It's very family-oriented, and I think because flamenco is a culture all unto itself, and it expresses the history along with the emotion of the Andalusian culture, the gypsies and their travels, I think everyone can definitely relate to our programs. I mean, we've got a variety of dances and songs, you know, from happy songs of weddings to, of course, tributes to, you know, our fathers, as well, of course, some folkloric dances, which are very, very custom of the province of Valencia in a celebration format there the fun bulerias where folks make fun of each other. So I think because it's such a cultural art form and all the songs tell a story of the people, everyone, young and old, no matter what cultural background, will be able to relate to the passion that the Ensemble Español brings to our stages.
Be a great way to spend the week. Under the artistic direction of founder Dame Libby Camacho, Ensemble Español is internationally recognized as the premier center for Spanish dance, music, and culture in America. Its 40 sensational dancers, singers, instrumentalists with international guest artists promotes Spanish dance culture in all its forms, from flamenco to traditional folkloric to classical renaissance to the 21st century. The elegance and passion of Spain's dance, music, and culture is showcased in Ensemble Español's 36th American Spanish Dance and Music Festival, Thursday, June 14th through Sunday, June 24th. Each year, this popular festival attracts thousands of cultural fans from around the world to experience Spain in America with the Ensemble Español Spanish Dance Theater's full company and guest artists from Spain. And on the line with us right now is our good friend Jorge Perez from Ensemble Español. Jorge, maybe a phone number or website if people would like to get some information?
Definitely, yes. 773-442-5916 at 773-442-5916. And our website, very easy, ensembleespanol.org. And they'll click on festivals there. Right on their first page, we dedicated it to our festival. They'll just click on festival, and they'll see what programs they would like to partake in, let it be the North Shore closing gala concerts or our opening concert tomorrow night, or even some of the classes. All the classes are in all three styles of Spanish dance and are in different levels, including the wonderful historic Spanish Dance History Seminar we've got for 3 days with Juan Mata and Ana Gonzalez.
Jorge, you are a delight to chat with, and your enthusiasm is infectious. I know this will be a success here. Please give Dame Libby our best, and come back and talk with us, will you please?
Will do. Thank you so much, Kevin.
God bless you, my friend.
Okay.
Thank
Bye-bye.
You, Jorge. Jorge Perez, one of the principals with Ensemble Español's 36th American Spanish Dance and Music Festival, through the 24th at both Northeastern Illinois University and the North Shore Center for the Performing Arts in Skokie. For information, 773-442-5916. And, of course, continuing the Dad Commandments, hey, Dad, be big. Hey, Dad, be small. Hey, Dad, come home. Bob and weave, Bubba. Stay light on your feet. Don't make too many hard and fast rules. Never dance in front of their friends. Save your money, big man. Spend your money, tightwad. Never go on a ride with the word whirl in its name, especially the space shuttle whirl at the Great Escape near Lake Jordan, New York. It's tougher to be a good father when your nervous system is permanently compromised. Stay on the ground and wave. Number 9, let them be. They're not your second chance. We become most upset with the kids when they remind us of, well, us. Help them follow their own path, not your road not taken. Finally, number 10, love their mother. Hug mom often in front of the kids. Sure, sometimes marriages end, but the obligation to woman doesn't. Be grateful to her. Speak to her with respect. Try to make her laugh. Listen. Even if you're not married to her, figured out how to love her. The Ten Commandments, the Ten Fundamental Laws for Fathers, very true. And a couple more quotes. It doesn't matter who my father was, it matters who I remember he was, from Anne Sexton. To become a father is not hard. To be a father is, however. An author unknown, any man can be a father, it takes someone special to be a dad. From Harmon Killebrew, my father used to play with my brother and me in the yard. Mother would come out and say, you're tearing up the grass. My dad would reply, we're not raising grass, hon. We're raising boys. Marlo Thomas, of course, Danny Thomas's daughter, said, my father said there were two kinds of people in the world, givers and takers. The takers may eat better, but the givers sleep better. Finally, the great Jim Valvano, the late Jim Valvano, great North Carolina coach, said, my father gave me the greatest gift anyone could give another person. He believed in me. Very true. Very true. Well, we had the 10 Dad Commandments, and we had a couple thoughts about dads, and certainly want to wish everybody a happy Father's Day. And enjoy the day, as we said before, if part of that is enjoying it with the kids. Enjoy that time, too. Well, that about does it for our show today. I thank you for sharing this last hour with me and hope you, our listeners, have enjoyed this time as much as I have. Especially like to thank Patrick Bristow, very talented man. You've seen him in Seinfeld and Friends and Curb Your Enthusiasm, Mad About You. And now he is the co-creator and host of the groundbreaking presentation of the Henson Alternatives Stuffed and Unstrung through June 17th at the Bank of America Theater, 18 West Monroe. For information, 800-775-2000. Sarah Moeller, the production manager for the 12th Annual Sketchbook Festival through July 15th at the Flatiron Arts Building, 1579 North Milwaukee in Wicker Park. For information, 312-226-9633. I want to wish our good pal Anthony Mosley a good luck also. And finally, what a delightful conversation we had with Jorge Perez, one of the principals at Ensemble Español and their 36th American Spanish Dance and Music Festival, through the 24th at both Northeastern Illinois University and the North Shore Center for the Performing Arts in Skokie. For information, 773-442-5916. Boy, Jorge had some enthusiasm, didn't he? We thank Ann Fink for putting that together. She always does a terrific job for us. Very much appreciated from Carol Fox Associates. Finally, a famous writer once said, one ought, every day at least, to hear a little song, read a good poem, see a fine picture, and if it were possible, to speak a few reasonable words. I hope on our show today we have, at the very least, done just that, spoken a few reasonable words. At that, I'd like to wish everyone a good week, and as that British group once said, and in the end, the love that you take is equal to the love that you make. Have a great day, and happy Father's Day. Now or never, the more I love, the more that I'm afraid. But in your eyes I may not see forever. Forever. Yet be the best of friends. If we can try with every day to make it better as it grows, any luck then I suppose. The music, the music.